Thanks so much for joining us on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here. Bassam Shakashiri back with us. He's a professor of chemistry at UW-Madison, a national proponent for science and education. And today we're going to talk with him about changes in climate change priorities in Wisconsin. We can talk about COVID vaccines. We can talk about the Mars rover. Lots of things, science and education wise, we can discuss with him, and I hope you'll join in. The number to call is 1-800-642-1234, or you can send an email to ideas@wpr.org, ideas@wpr.org. Bassam Shakashiri, welcome back. Good to have you with us again.
Thank you, Larry. I'm very happy to be back with you. Do you realize that it has been exactly 1 year to the day since we saw each other face to face in the studio? It's been a rough year for everyone, not just us, for everyone. But this is the longest period of time that I have not seen you in person to be on your program in over 30 years. So we adjust, yeah. We adapt, and of course we try to do what is best for us individually and what's also good for others that surround us. But I'm happy to be back with you, Larry.
Yeah. Well, you mentioned adjustment, and the new administration has made some adjustments in the global warming as a priority, and it is now a priority for the Biden administration. You have to be pretty happy about that.
Happy. I'm happy for everyone who inhabits the planet. I'm happy for everyone in America. I'm happy for everyone in Wisconsin. I'm happy because we need to work together to mitigate global warming. It is not only an individual effort. It has to be a very good and focused group effort. And the government, the federal government, in the new administration, has put the climate crisis at the center of U.S. foreign policy and national security. And the response to this climate crisis will require significant short-term global reductions in greenhouse emissions. And I say global reductions in greenhouse emissions because these emissions do not know any geographic boundaries. But I quickly want to point out that in the United States, we are responsible for about 40% of the emission of greenhouse gases. And so this is one of the results of the great advances in science and technology that enable us to live in the most advanced society in history. But there are consequences. And these consequences have resulted in tremendous increases in the emission of harmful greenhouse gases. So I'm very, very happy with the new initiatives. And I think with our leadership, not only locally and in the country, but around the world, I think humanity has a good fighting chance to mitigate global warming.
Tell us about the changes that are being made. Are you familiar with them?
Well, yes. We're back in the Paris Accord, which is a very important global arrangement aimed at reducing the emissions of greenhouse gases and promotes renewable energy sources. So that's very, very important. This is important for not only the United States, but for all countries. So there will be new partnerships. There will be civil discourse and discussions and agreements, both bilateral and multilateral, to help put the world on a sustainable climate pathway. So I think all the diplomatic efforts, all the social efforts, all the foreign policy and national security efforts are going to make a difference. And I think we should support our government in taking these initiatives, and we should be doing our own personal share locally and across the country. Yes, I think these are really, really important. The emphasis is make sure that the economic benefits of renewable energy sources are understood by us. To make sure that we lower our dependence on fossil fuels as a source of energy. I'm not saying we're going to stop driving cars. I'm not saying we're going to stop flying. Not at all. Well, we need to take steps to reduce our dependence on the use of fossil fuels as sources of energy. And to that extent, Larry, I'm very pleased that in Wisconsin and elsewhere, there is more action now to have solar farms, to have wind turbines, and to really reduce our dependence on fossil fuels as a source of energy.
Bassam Shakashiri, our guest today, we've started by talking a bit about climate change. We can get into other areas of science and science education as well with him as we go along here. You can join in 800-642-1234 or email us at ideas@wpr.org. And let's take a call. Jean in Sun Prairie, thank you for calling.
Hi. So I have been a fan of Dr. Shakashiri for about 35 years now. When I was a school child, you actually sponsored a poster contest on the theme of climate change and addressing environmental concerns. And I was one of your chosen winners. And so got to visit Madison as a small child, and was really exciting to go to one of your lectures. And it's one of the things that really inspired me to go into science. And now I'm a pharmacist.
Oh,
so, I'm very happy to hear from you, Jean. Nothing can be more rewarding to a teacher than hearing from former students and people that a teacher has interacted with. And I'm happy to hear that you are a pharmacist now. And make me a bit happier, Jean, by telling me, what are you doing in your community? What would you like to be doing in your community to help mitigate global warming?
What do you think, Jean?
I try to be as thoughtful as I can about energy use and, you know, carpooling when I go on long trips, things like that. Certainly been saving a lot of energy this year, staying home, not a lot of travel.
Yeah, that's for sure.
Good. How about changing the light bulbs at home? Think about that. Driving less is good. Don't stop driving. Just drive less, and maybe think about the type of vehicle that you want to drive, want to be driving, want others in a community to be driving. For example, you know, a hybrid car uses less fossil fuels. So there's different ways of contributing individually to help mitigate global warming. But I'm thankful, Jean, that you called, and I didn't really mean to put you on the spot here, but all of us have to continue to work together and help others understand the ramifications and the consequences, because global warming is the single biggest challenge that humanity has ever faced. And we can do something about it. We are up to the task. And so I appreciate your call very much, Jean. And please continue to follow some of the activities that we are doing. We, you know, visit my website where we have new entries that relate to all kinds of experiments people can do at home and so on. So visit scifun.org, scifun.org. And thank you so much, Jean, for calling.
Yeah, Jean, thank you very much. Always heartening to hear when a former student comes on with a nice comment about how in her case, how she was inspired by some things that you were doing, Bassam. Dave in Madison, let's give you a chance. Hi, Dave.
Hi there. Thanks for taking my call. What I would like you to talk about is the effects of using all of these battery-powered cars, solar panels, fields that take up huge amounts of land. How are we going to, can we recycle these batteries that are being used for all of this kind of stuff? You know, that really never gets talked about, and I think it should. Is that a good thing or a bad thing? Can we recycle all these batteries, that kind of thing, you know?
Recycling is an important responsibility that, we have. And so there are many, many issues related to batteries. And of course, there's safe handling, and we want to make sure there are no accidents, no explosions, and so on. But we need to also think about their use and storage of electricity and recycling, as you say. So, and as far as, you know, taking square footage of land, that's an important factor to look into also. But the benefits of getting of capturing solar energy and storing it in batteries is, you know, these benefits are important and are big. And I'd like to mention in this regard that, you know, my laboratory, my office, the chemistry department, is housed in the Farrington Daniels building. Farrington Daniels was a chemistry professor, and over 60 years ago started doing research on solar energy and the kinds of dealing with the kinds of questions that Dave has just asked. And that's why we need to have more research, more emphasis on understanding the consequences of the changes that we undertake in order to help mitigate climate change.
Yeah. Dave, thank you very much for calling. Bassam Shakashiri, our guest, professor of chemistry at UW-Madison. As we talk science, climate change, we can get into COVID vaccines a little too, and even talk about Mars and the Mars rovers. So join in, 800-642-1234, email to ideas at WPR.org. Jill Nadeau, Jana Rose Slice, our producers today, Tyler Ditter, our engineer. I'm Larry Mueller. You're listening to the Ideas Network. Taking a look at science and science education today with our guest, Bassam Shakashiri. Join in, 800-642-1234. Email to ideas at WPR.org. Let's take another call. Paul in Slinger, thank you for calling. What's on your mind?
Good morning, everybody. Maybe the good professor could discuss a little bit about nuclear energy. The Navy has had nuclear-powered aircraft carriers, the largest being the Gerald Ford, for almost 70 years. They never had a crisis, and they have built so much safety and security redundancy into these modular systems that would establish the baseline energy requirements on all the industrialized nations in the world and even the third world nations. And they can be designed to be essentially terrorist proof. And clearly it is the only source of electrical energy that the residual waste can be buried underground in geologic areas where it will last for 50,000 years without being introduced into the atmosphere. Why aren't we developing plans that could be implemented across the planet by private industry to build these things?
A good question, Paul. Thank you. You're talking specifically about the use of nuclear energy, right? Is that what I want to make sure that, yes. So
modular nuclear energy. Yeah.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Well, we not only at UW-Madison in our College of Engineering and elsewhere on campus, we have people doing research on a safe and proper use of nuclear reactions as a source of energy. But as you pointed out, the storage challenge of the radioactive isotopes is is a huge problem. And these isotopes have long half-lives. Yes, they'll be buried for a long time, but where are they going to be buried? We've had issues in the state of Washington where some nuclear waste was buried. We've had issues in near Denver, Rocky Flats, and elsewhere. So that remains a very big challenge for us to think about, and to think about it both scientifically and technologically, but also in terms of the impact on the places where the nuclear waste is buried. So then there is the question really in terms of all the things that we can do, how high on the list is that, and what are the risks? What are the risks and the benefits and the cost of those risks? That's something that should be evaluated not only scientifically but on a society. I'm not dismissing it. I'm just saying that we should, as you said, you know, for 60 some plus years, been doing research on it. But a problem is the long storage and the consequences of the storage on the locations where these items will be stored.
Now, thank you, Paul, for calling. Appreciate it. Mike in Madison, it's your turn. Hi, Mike.
Hi, Larry. Hi, Bassam. This is Mike Randall from the Wonders of Physics. Bassam, you and I, we've worked together, and along with Clint Sprott. Calling in, so happy to hear you. I'm calling in. I'm still involved as a volunteer with the Wonders of Physics and also with Science Alliance, which is all the outreach programs on campus. And Bassam, I'm sure you're probably going to be talking about the Science Expeditions event coming up here in April. I'm actually on the committee to make it virtual this year. Normally, it's a big campus-wide science festival. The bulk of it will be available online, either recording, there'll be some live events, and there will still be some in-person stuff, too. And I just want to encourage people to know about that and to participate. And they go to science.wisc.edu, they can find out more information.
Well, Mike, before, yes, it's very important. Science Expeditions is a very important public engagement activity, and it's going to happen. What are the dates again?
April 9th to the 11th.
And it's going to be virtual, and people can get more information about it by going to what's the website again?
The Science Alliance website, science.wisc.edu. And there will still be some live events. We're still working on that. They won't be right on campus, but they'll be peripheral. But most of the activities will be available through. We're putting together what I hope is going to be a really fun user website.
And you know, Mike, that I'm going to be doing a presentation. It'll be a virtual presentation. I wish we could do it in person, but there are other events that will happen in person. Yes. There is a continuation of doing these public engagement programs. And I appreciate your calling, Mike. Yes, it's April 9th, the 10th, and 11th, right?
That's
9th,
correct.
10th, and 11th,
and
right.
I look forward to watching your show, as I always do.
Well, please participate in it. Don't just watch it. So it's going to be interactive. It's going to be interactive. And we're going to do a lot of fun things. We're going to do some experiments you can do at home, and of course we will include emphasis on climate change. It's very, very important that we learn more about that and we act accordingly. Thank you, Mike.
Yeah, thanks, Mike. Thank you very much for calling. And you know, it just reminds me that things like science expeditions mean a lot to people, and I think, great to get young people involved. It reminds me of the first caller we had today who was inspired by a little science event that you were part of. And I've got to believe that a number of young people have been encouraged or inspired to go into science fields based on science expeditions and other things like it.
Yes, yes. I'm very grateful when people call and or contact me and tell me about that. But it's both the benefit that the people themselves get who become scientists or go into science or technology fields, but it's also for everyone else to develop a better understanding and an appreciation of the joy of science explorations and just to be aware and to be enriched by the wonderful world that we live in and how we view it and how we can continue to be responsible in protecting our planet. So, so important, Larry. And I'm sorry. Go ahead, Larry.
No, I was just going to add in, and again, just as a reminder, to learn more about that science expedition, you can go to science.wisc.edu and learn how you can get involved or participate April 9th through the 11th. It's coming up. So there you go.
And I will also post it on my website under events of interest, because it is an event of great interest.
Joe in Montello, it's your turn. Hi.
Hi, Bassam and Larry. Hey, just yesterday I was reading kind of the cutting edge on solar powered cars, where they put solar panels on cars, and not as the primary energy source, but they are getting, if you park your car out in the sun for 5 hours, you'd get 30 miles of range on these prototype cars, and that's a little bit of good news. And then they said the UPS and Postal Service type trucks, they could get about 200 square feet of panels on that, could power them almost exclusively. So there's a little good news.
There are so many research activities underway, and you know that what's astounding to me, what's satisfying to me, is the human ingenuity in trying to deal with complexity and trying to address grand challenges like we face here. Right? And so yes, there are many such ventures, and you know, as I said earlier, we need to include always the economic benefits from whatever it is that we try to do, and as we do, of course, we do it safely.
Yeah, thank you, Joe, for calling. Appreciate it. Well, Jim in Wanakee, will give you a chance. Hi, Jim.
Well, hello. Thanks for the program. Very interesting. I have an add-on or a question about the nuclear thing that you were talking about a bit ago, and I missed part of it because I was getting online here or on the phone line. But anyway, I have never really been too strong on nuclear energy because of the safety factors that you were discussing earlier, you know, Three Mile Island and all those things. I have a brother who's a nuclear engineer, and he was saying that one of the things that's been a problem with the nuclear energy production is the kind of reactors that we use. In France, they use a breeder reactor where they use up these radioactive isotopes. And he's always frustrated because why don't they do that in the United States? And the other thing is, I heard just the other day, and I'm trying to keep an open mind about nuclear, because I think we're a stronger nation if we use a lot of different sources of clean energy production as opposed to, you know, putting all our eggs in one basket. But I heard that there's a new nuclear reactor system that operates, or is cooled down by air as opposed to water, which reduces the explosion factor of these nuclear reactors, like what we had at Three Mile Island and Fukushima and so forth. Could you comment a little bit on that and the cost effectiveness of that? Talking to a physicist, he had a PhD in physics. He was real strong on nuclear energy, and he said that, you know, nuclear is one of the cheapest, cleanest forms of energy possible. I kind of question that, but I'd like to hear your comments on that source of energy.
Well, we need to explore carefully, methodically, all sources of renewable energy, with the emphasis on renewable. So we also need to be careful, very careful, about the risk-benefit analysis. This is really, really important. So colleagues here in engineering physics on campus at UW-Madison been doing research on that. Reactor technology has received a great deal of attention. There is a social dimension to it also, that people hear the word nuclear and they, you know, develop a negative reaction to it. You know, we have these MRI devices, magnetic resonance imaging devices. They're actually nuclear magnetic resonance, but with the word nuclear and the letter N has been dropped from that. So there are technical issues, safety issues, risk-benefit analysis, but there are also issues that relate to acceptance in society about the use of a certain technology. So I'm an advocate of exploration. I'm a strong advocate of solar, wind, other alternatives of renewable energy. So, you know, nuclear energy is net renewable. You know, once the reaction takes place, it's there. So I'm not against it. I'm just very cautious about it.
Thank you, Jim, for calling. Lester in Racine, it's your turn now. Hi, Lester.
Great program, you guys. I love what you guys are talking about. And I just have one quick question for you guys to tell me your opinion on what's the best strategy. I'm actually a teacher. I teach graduate school for a lot of guys. When I get into the business world, I make billionaires. That's my goal. I'm actually in placed with a lot of money right now. We have to give it away for different projects. There's $7.5 trillion that's being allocated to zones that are called opportunity zones around this country. Right now, my three focuses are three different things. I have the solar. I have also the water purification. We take salt water and turn it into drinkable water in areas that need it. And we also do agroponics. Those are my three zones. I'm trying to see where I focus all the money. And what do you guys have opinions on, or do you have any opinions in that area?
Mm-hmm. I'd like to learn more about what you just said before I express an opinion. I think it's good that you share this with me, but I have to think a bit more about it than to give you a quick response to it.
All right. Well, Lester, keep listening, and maybe Bassam will come up with some more thoughts on that as we move along. We'll go to Tim in Kenosha next. Hi, Tim.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I had a question. I'm like y'all, I'm a proponent of alternate energies. I do have solar panels on my house, so I'm kind of, you know, trying to practice what I preach. But what I've encountered is pushback regarding mining of rare earth minerals that go into the battery and solar industry, and it's pretty nasty sounding projects in Africa and whatnot, using children and mining, and I'm also concerned about. Well, I grew up in Western Colorado too during the uranium boom in the '60s, and there was a lot of very negative effects from mining there, and people becoming mm-hmm. sick from it. But so I guess my question is, do you have any answers or pushback to people who are, against mining of any sort in this area?
Well, the thank you, Tim. The environmental consequences of mining have to be taken into very strong consideration. We've had a lot of debates and even lawsuits in Wisconsin about this and elsewhere. So, my approach, you asked for my opinion. My opinion is first, do no harm. I've borrowed this, this is the Hippocratic Oath, but I'm not a physician. But my version of it is first and always do no harm. So whatever we extract, we have to do it safely. We have to think about the consequences to the immediate location. We're all using electronic devices that have rare earth elements in them they're extracted from the ground overseas, especially overseas. There are social dimensions, very important social dimensions, as you just said, in terms of child labor, in terms of abuse in mining and so on. All of these things are part of what we should be discussing and taking responsible action about. So I don't know if this sufficiently addresses your question, Tim.
Yes, it is a definite concern, and it's not going to get easier to answer either, because I'm guessing that we'll needing to be doing more mining in this country as all of this progresses. So it's a major concern needs to be addressed.
Sure.
I appreciate your point of view.
Thanks, Tim. Appreciate it very much. Let's give Otto in Oak Creek a chance to join in. Otto, hi. Thank you for calling.
Good morning. Thank you very much for this discussion this morning. I just had a question. And was wanting insight and solution and wisdom maybe related to what you believe we've learned from the recent global thermal, the cold that went across our country and how Texas was affected in the midst of it. And I was just wanted to hear more about your thoughts related to that.
The Texas power grid.
Well, the issues that that were just mentioned and raised here are important issues, and they really awaken us to be prepared and ready to deal with eventualities that we may have not thought about before. So the effect of global warming on changes in our climate need to be looked at very, very carefully and have us be better prepared to deal with them. This applies to the rise of the oceans. This applies to extreme weather changes. There are two points, if I may, Larry, that I'd like to share with our listening audience. Two points that help us focus on understanding the consequences of climate change. And they're local points. One is to look at the so-called plant hardiness zones in Wisconsin and how they have changed. There's a very simple, colorful map that I have on my website. And I think, Larry, you have posted it before on your website that shows how the consequences of global warming have affected the plant hardiness zones. And so a third grader can look at these maps and see a clear telltale of global warming. It's important to understand that. The second example I give here, the second point, is to look at the duration of ice on the surface of lakes in Wisconsin. In my case, in our case here, Lake Mendota is frozen right now. Over the years, it's become very clear that the duration of ice on the surface of the lake is getting shorter and shorter. It's another telltale of global warming. So understanding what the telltales are, learning more about how this happens, why they come about. Why did the climate, why did the weather change so much in Texas all of a sudden? Was it really all of a sudden? All of these points are part of what we do in our local communities. It's part of what we try to deal with and converse about. And also always listen to people who have acquired more knowledge about it, people who have done research about it. But taking personal responsibility is very, very important in this regard. And so does that help with your question, Otto?
Otto, we've lost. Otto, thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. Well, Bassam, we're getting near the end here. Any last words of wisdom on this whole business? You gave some pretty good ones about climate change. What about science and science education to wind things up?
Well, we need to really pay closer attention to what goes on in our schools and our colleges and universities in terms of educating the people who are part of formal education about climate issues. I would love to see every graduate from every college in Wisconsin be so knowledgeable about the science of climate change and the consequences, the social ramifications of that. Now, I'm not suggesting we should have a requirement for that, but it really would be good for the public institutions, the private institutions in the state of Wisconsin to try to incorporate the science of climate change in the courses that they teach now. I know there are many examples already that take place. So that's a very important part that relates to the connection between science and society. And also it relates to what it means to be the holder of a bachelor's degree or a two-year degree from any institution of higher education in the state of Wisconsin. So that's a point we should talk about and see how we can get the faculty, can get the administrators to think about ways by which we can further put at the forefront the importance of mitigating global warming.
Bassam, always a pleasure. Thank you so much for being with us today. I really appreciate it. We'll look forward to your next visit. Thank you.
Thank you, Larry. Thanks very much. I look forward to seeing you in person sometime. I don't know when, yeah, but sometime.
Sometime soon, we hope. But Sam Shakashiri, I would invite you to go to his website, scifun.org. So it's scifun.org. There's lots of great material there. I know he's going to be posting something on science expeditions that's coming up in April, but also he has lots of really good information about science. Got some great lab exercises that if you've got some children, no matter the age, he's got some great experiments you can do right in your own home. Bassam Shakashiri, always great to have him stop by. Well, we're switching gears. Coming up next on the Ideas Network, we're going to be taking a look at a bit about the history of Native Americans and comedy, including the United Nations' Charlie Hill. That'll come into play as well. Two guests for you coming up next on the Ideas Network. I'm Larry Mehler.